Hey everyone, I'm excited to introduce my next guest on the Davis and Hang podcast. This is actually episode 148 with Howie Zuo, right?
Yep.
Yeah, and I'm so grateful for Ray for introducing us. Rochelle's an awesome human being and she's just super kind and always connecting me with interesting folks. So thanks for introducing us.
Yeah, I'm super stoked to be here. Again, appreciate the connection to you and of course, a little bit of small world syndrome. You know, I'm originally from New Jersey. You know some of the people that I knew growing up. So it's like, you know, it's awesome to build these connections later in life that you didn't know would ever happen.
Yeah, thank you. And you also have an emotional intelligence coaching practice called Thriving Turtle, where you support Asian Americans in a lot of the emotional intelligence around identity. And yeah, just excited to have you on the podcast.
Yeah, thank you.
Cool. So how'd you come up with the name Thriving Turtle?
So funny enough, it was one of those kind of like, I'm sitting there on a couch, just like, this is should be the easiest or hardest thing that I'm ever doing. And I actually have this little house plant and it says Thrive, just big letters on it. And I was staring at it and I said, you know, that's a good start. And I felt like, nah, that's a little too easy. How do I expand that a little bit? And I thought about actually a recent trip of mine going to the Turtle Conservatory out here in Ojai, California. And I've actually always liked turtles. I had a pet turtle growing up as a kid. So I was like, why not? Mm-hmm. To emphasize, hey, your journey might be slow. You know, you might be crawling or hiding in your shell sometimes, but hey, we're here to thrive.
Mm. Yeah, I feel like Asians and turtles is a good analogy. I feel like sometimes we go in the shell as we retreat because there's that fear of looking bad and the saving face, and
yeah,
as we retreat. And then I think there's maybe that longevity piece that we always wish upon each other during Lunar New Year's and things like that. And yeah, I feel like the turtle is a good analogy for our people.
Yeah, thank you. And I've been just enjoying both parts of it. Exactly, you know, you mentioned being able to connect to my personal Chinese, but overall Asian heritage, but also emphasizing the Thrive part too. Part of my business recognizes that how many of us individuals, or maybe your parents or even your grandparents, came from a place where they were trying to survive. And the tagline on my site is transforming from a survive mindset into a thriving mindset, because what served you or your family back then, it's amazing. It's awesome. I'm never going to discredit that. It's more about like, what can we do now to take the next step, go to the next level sort of thing.
Hmm. Yeah, I love what you said about not making them wrong, because they have certain circumstances that are different than ours. And sometimes we might not ever understand that, right? Because many of us haven't gone through as many trials and tribulations of starting over in a new country or learning a new language or whatever the case may be. And just respecting and honoring the past. And also, we are our own generation, and we also have our own struggles of fitting in or societal expectations and, you know, social media as well, right? In terms of comparing yourself and always benchmarking yourself against your peers as well.
Oh, absolutely. Isn't that like the Asian thing growing up? You compare to your brother, sister, cousin, neighbors, whatever, right? And it didn't help growing up in Jersey, right? We're next to all these Ivy League schools, and you're comparing SAT scores or whatever schools you got into, GPAs and all that. And it's, you know, looking back on it, you understand that it's what your parents know to motivate, right? They want you to say, hey, it's doable. Hey, like if someone else can do it, you can do it sort of thing. But it never comes off that way, right? And it almost feels like, just like pit fighting, like we got to be the best. And Now I want to transform that into like, hey, how do we be a community and uplift each other? And build each other up in a way that doesn't require us to just be battling, right?
That's a great point. Yeah, I think I'm not sure. This is like a pretty blanketed statement that all Asians like think more like win loss. Like there's like, but I do think I forgot someone mentioned it to me, but they felt like, white Americans are better at like just giving help just for the sake of giving help and not always wanting something in return. I never thought about that. I was like, yeah, I think sometimes if people offer help to like, my parents, I feel like they might be skeptical. They might be like, why is this person like trying to help me? Whereas like, maybe in, I guess networking terms or in more traditional white families, I have seen that like they just give for the sake of giving, but maybe it's just culturally, it's a little bit more acceptable. Whereas maybe in our culture, getting help sometimes means that like you're not strong enough or you're not able to be self, you're not being independent or something like that.
Yeah, I completely get it, especially since many Asian cultures are so rooted in a family, right? Like within the family, you do anything and everything and sort of thing. And in some ways that's good, and in some ways that's toxic, at the same time, if you don't have the right boundaries, sort of thing. But I completely get what you said about like, freely giving. And I think about it in terms of like, oh, as our parents get older, right? The generalized expectation is, oh, your family members take care of you. The concept of like government assistance or like going to a old people home or anything like that is like foreign and like no, right? The concept of like volunteering is like a huge struggle. And I'm very grateful at a young age I volunteered at soup kitchens and things like that, because it showed me that I can't boil down everyone's story so easily. You meet people who have hard times, and they didn't have a single contribution to why they were there. They get sick, a car accident, whatever, like, right? And I want to be a part of a community. I want to build a community where we support these people, and that we give people value not by what they can produce or what they can bring to the table, but just because they exist.
It's an interesting concept, right? Because Asian West Eastern culture is more collective, like about the collective. So in a way, you would think it would be, and then American culture is more in celebrates the individual, right? So you would think that it would there'd be less nonprofit work and stuff like that. But it's weird, right? Like I don't know that many American families that don't contribute to some nonprofit, don't volunteer, right? It's actually very common. So it's just kind of mind-blowing to me to think, because I know in Vietnam I volunteer for the Orphans Future Alliance, and I know finding volunteers in Vietnam is very difficult, where it's not part of the culture as much, where over here, when I worked at LinkedIn, it was normal to volunteer like 80 hours at least, and it's just interesting to see how different it is in certain countries.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you on the cultural level. Like at my last corporate job, they were like, you have 2 days to go like volunteer. We don't care. If you want to volunteer for like your kid's sports team, you can like apply for like $200 to go towards like their uniforms or equipment or something. And that was such a strange feeling to me, right? Because it was like, wait, how does, is this a PR angle? Probably a little bit, right?
Little bit, yeah.
I'm not gonna, be too naive about it, but the fact that it's being done at all says a lot about where the priorities are. And when I was working at a Japanese company, it was like 100% work. There was not a single thing related to not work, in your day-to-day anything.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that because I work for a couple of European companies. Like, this is my second European company that I work for, and it's very much that you don't work more than 40 hours a week. Like, it's unless you're like, a founder or you're like at the C-suite level and VP and above, but they don't expect you to work more than 40 hours a week. And I'm sure in Japanese companies or Korean companies, that's it's the opposite, right? If you work 40 hours a week, you're fired pretty much.
And I love that intersection because I think that's what we get to live every day as a luxury here in the US at least, where my cultural background is a little bit of A and a little bit of B, and I can incorporate different meanings of success. Just like you said, European companies, I had European coworkers who like take the entire month of August off, right? That's a thing.
Literally, yeah.
And you read their away messages, and I'm like, I hate you so much. not in the like I hate them way, but it's like that's just their default setting. And it's meaningful because they what do they do? Just spend it on themselves, vacation, go out, travel with the kids. For such a family-oriented culture, we don't spend a lot of time with our family. And I don't say that in a kind of derogatory way. It's we had, often a whole generation's like we moved to America and we had no opportunity to do that. And so at some point, transitioning into that thrive mindset, I hope we can refocus and spend more time with our families, with our loved ones, with our kids, and get those definitions of success that we can't count. We can't count houses, we can count houses or money, but how much time you spend with your loved ones, you can't measure that in anything meaningful to me anyways.
Yeah, you mentioned surviving versus thriving. It's tough, right? Because my parents grew up, escaping the war in Vietnam, and when they came here, with a few dollars in their pocket, it's hard to get them to think otherwise, right? It's like everything's about money. Everything's about like, hey, like, can you pay the bills? Like, let's buy a house. Like, and of course, all that is important. But it really is. I feel like it's very difficult for my parents to think. It's all they know, right? It's hard for them to really see a different way of being,
We have like a whole generation, like I mentioned, Chinese and Cultural Revolution, the Korean War, India with British people, leaving in like late 50s, if I remember, a tsunami, hurricane in Japan, like you name it, like something's happened. And it's hard to convince people who've been doing the same thing, for so long in their lives, hey, try something new. I mean, we work in, jobs is like, hey, let's try something new. It's like, now we've done this same way for 20 years. That was, my biggest gear grinder in manufacturing, right? Like we've been doing it this way for 20 years. And I'm like, okay, we've done a lot of things for 20 years ago, and now we have electric cars, we've got phones in our pockets, like the world's changing. And I want to empower old and young to like take it on with a challenge of like, ooh, this will be cool, and not a, oh no, I feel like I'm gonna be obsolete or I'm falling behind, or I'm going to be discarded because I'm not useful. That's what's going on in our community right now.
I'm curious, like, what caused you to seek higher, like, different, because it seems like you just have a lot of curiosity and different levels of consciousness and just finding different modalities. And in general, like, why do you think someone like a person like yourself is so curious about like different ways of living and stuff like that?
I think it's a great question, and I think it can be answered in multiple parts. One is I started traveling when I was young. I traveled by myself since like I could legally get a passport, and I go to live in hostels and eat like terrible food that I could barely afford, studied abroad, all that, right? And what that gave me insight into is the fact that people can live a different life than me, and they can be happy, right? And I during those times, I didn't quite process what it meant. I just kind of just got the surface level of what it meant, that they're happy, they're having fun, they have joy in your life. And as I got older, I did everything that I was supposed to do, air quotes supposed, to succeed. I have an engineering degree, I got a good paying job, I had monetary security, 401k, whatever you name it. And those are all very important things. But they didn't make me joyful. So they satisfied that security need, but it couldn't take me to the next level. And that engineering background was like, well, I gotta try everything, I gotta iterate. And so once you've tried everything that you just gotta start trying things that you don't know. And that gets weird real fast. And I recognize that I'm a outlier in that. So many of my clients struggle with, prospect of failure, prospect of sunk cost fallacy, letting go of everything they worked so hard for already, their parents worked so hard, disappointing themselves, their loved ones. And what I found is letting go of that might be the last thing you need to do before you can really dive into that deep success, right? And self-soothing those anxieties and insecurities. That's part of why I built my business, is that I don't expect everyone to just like, hey, you know what, just maximum risk, it'll work out, right? Like, that's a scary prospect. So my business is like, hey, I'm gonna handhold you, I'm gonna cheerlead you on. I'll be the If I'm the only person in your life who's there for you like that, great. Because I didn't have that when I was, going through my 20s. I was flailing around in the dark in a lot of ways.
But I feel like if you didn't have failed through going through the dark, do you think you would have had, like you're clearly a lot more wise and you've experienced and gone through a lot of trials and tribulations. I feel like wouldn't you necessarily be doing others a disservice by not allowing them to have to go through all that pain and failure?
And that just feels like you got to learn it the hard way sort of thing. And don't get me wrong, there are certain lessons that you got to learn the hard way. And that's the challenge I hold to myself, is can I teach the lesson without the pain that is associated with it? My easy example is, so many Asians, or across the board, kids were you beaten as kids, right? You screw up, you're beaten, and you use the carrot or the stick. Well, there was a lot of stick involved in your motivation to grow. And so that in short term or in bursts or in some settings, that works, right? Fear is a powerful motivation tool. Pain is a powerful motivation tool. It is not a healthy motivation tool, right? Because now you've taught a whole generation or individuals like, I'm afraid of sticks, I'm afraid of punishment, I'm afraid of failing. And what is growth? A bunch of failures till you take that data, take that experience, you incorporate that into your next iteration, prototype 2.0, 3.0, and you keep going till it works, right? But this paralysis by fear holds so many back. And I would love to hear, is that relatable to you? What was your story?
I mean, obviously, it sucks to get beaten, right? Like, that's never good. And like, yeah, you said like a lot of my Asian friends and minority friends have, similar, where every time that we did something bad, we would be definitely afraid of getting beaten, So, I definitely think it. Just reflecting back on that, like, it is traumatic, Like, it affects you even now, like as a I'm a 34-year-old, right? And I still get affected by stuff that happened when I was 9. I think what it taught me, I guess, and this is after doing a ton of therapy, a ton of like Tony Robbins and reflection and a lot of healing work, like hundreds and hundreds of hours of healing work. Like, in a way, I'm glad all that happened because now I get to, like, similar to you, get to be of service, be a contribution, and help others. And if I didn't go through all that, I don't think I would have the compassion or the relatability to be able to understand what people are going through at the, some of the darkest, deepest moments.
Yeah, and so, that's one part of we get to use that, shared experience, shared culture. I'm not saying it's a great one, but to take the silver lining and use that, let's build bridges and connect with people. And then once we connect, we can start the healing and teach concepts like self-forgiveness, right? Recognizing that, and I feel like my parents and many other parents, they pushed us so hard because they were so afraid of failing, right? They were so afraid of screwing up. They were so afraid of being bad parents, looking bad socially, all of the above, right? And so I can't say their love came from a bad place. I'm saying that can we express it in a better way for the next generation? Because it does hold you back. We spend years fixing that we could empower the next generation. Like, hey, take that energy and let's go to the next level.
What you said about failure definitely resonates, right? I think when you're getting hit, whether it's getting bad grades or, oh, I don't want you to go through the same struggles I did, or whatever, the intentions are good. I get it, right? They just want us to have better lives than they did, and they want us to have, less scarcity, like less risk, right? Like what they did coming to America. And it is sad to kind of see that it still affects us as adults. And at the same time, I do think our generation is changing that, right? I think a lot of us, I mean, hopefully if we're aware enough, we are changing it, and we don't, we're not gonna like hit our kids and not physically hurt them, right? And yeah, it's tough. Parenting is tough. I have compassion for them now that I'm older. Like, okay, they did the best they could, and maybe I would have done it differently, but at the end of the day, it made us who the people we are today,
Yeah, and I say this, say this, knowing that if when you choose to have kids or work with kids or anything, I know you'll do better because you're just that much more aware. And that's, the first step of breaking, vicious cycles. Recognizing that what was done wasn't done out of malice. And so when you can have that healing for yourself, you can have that healing for your parents and forgiveness for your parents. And then you know how to teach that forgiveness because you model it as a behavior, right? I certainly would not want to teach anybody that failure is bad. I would just want to say, hey, it didn't work out. Take that data point, take that experience, load it up into the next iteration because that makes you better. We do that if it wasn't, studying, it'd be playing sports, right? You play basketball. You don't shoot like one hoop and then be like, oh, I missed. I'm a terrible player, right? Nobody sees that like that. And if it's like lifting weights, it's like, today I can bench 150. Tomorrow I don't bench 150. I'm tired, right? Does that mean you got weaker? No. You're in fluid in motion. And I think everyone has this idealistic version of themselves in their head. And what I want to take them is like, hey, let's bring it into the world. What sticks is great and what doesn't, we refine. We can grow, we can change, we can evolve. I call that me, right? If it's not my career where I've been across the board, I study chemical engineering. I have not worked as a chemical engineer. I worked in aerospace, I worked in IT, I worked in sales. And one thing I've heard so often is like, don't you think that was a waste of education? I was like, no. The choices I made when I was like 18 was the best choices I could make when I was 18. And those choices fueled me to where I am. So I would not change a single thing.
Yeah, I love that acceptance, right? I hear a lot of your self-forgiveness, like you accepting who you are and making peace with the past and ultimately having compassion for yourself. And then once you have that compassion for yourself, it's so much easier to give it to someone else because you don't have, you feel like you don't have to fix yourself, right? You feel like you don't have to fix others. You can just simply be with others, and that's a beautiful place to be.
Yeah, and I like how you put it, like just being, right? Our parents want us to be perfect, except people aren't perfect. And that's such a hard pill to swallow, but it is a real, it's the real truth. And we're, as a culture, so often it's like working towards the next thing. You go to school, you finish school, you got to get your job, you got to move up, you got to think of the next thing. How good are we at celebrating the here and now? Right. That's something I try to do in my day-to-day life. Like, let's just celebrate all the things. Like you fixed your car, like let's celebrate. Or you woke up today and you felt extra. Okay, let's celebrate. Right? Or how, why not? Why are we gatekeeping joy for from ourselves?
Yeah, I think there is this old school. I don't know if it's like humility is, they say a lot of Asians, their value is humility, right? But when we take it too far where we can never celebrate any of our success, that's not healthy either, right? So it's like knowing, it's like having healthy balance, I think.
Yeah, it's funny enough, that made me think of this Buddhist retreat I went to. And I was like, hey, opportunity to learn how to calm my mind, learn some inner peace and all that good stuff. And I'm learning from like the pamphlets and they're speaking, and like the first thing they say is, Buddhist is not a religion. It's sort of a way of life, and it's supposed to make your life better. The second it doesn't, you should discard it. And I was like, wow, that's weird, right? Because I've learned a bit about Christianity, Islam, Judaism, right? And their first line is not like, hey, if this isn't working, just buy. Right? And Asians are Buddhism is rooted in Asian culture, right?
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned Buddhism. So that was something I resisted a lot as a child because my mom is Buddhist, and in America, I feel like you don't see a lot of that. So I always like resisted it. I'm like, oh, my mom's doing like the weird stuff that she does. And then the older I get, the more I gravitate towards Buddhism because I love, like you said, like just mindfulness and just enjoying the moment and just all the elements of like just being present. And it's just funny because I think what we tend to resist tends to always come back. And yeah, it's like I appreciate, I love reading like Dalai Lama and Thich Nhat Hanh and all that stuff. It's beautiful.
Yeah, and I feel like more than ever it's applicable in our modern age where like we got attention spans of goldfish with TikTok and IG and scrolling, doom scrolling your news and whatever. And that same retreat, like the first exercise we did was like, hey guys, we're just gonna walk a quarter mile through the forest. By the way, we're gonna go as slow as possible. Like the slower, the better. And I think it took us a half hour to walk a quarter mile. And the whole point of it was just like, hey, they're like, hey, notice nature. Like, notice that leaf. Notice that bird sitting there. Hey, like, check out how your wind feels on your body. Like all these sensations through not only your eyes, your nose, your ears, your skin, like how disconnected we've been just because we need this constant inflow of data. And I'll speak to like several of clients of mine who's like, yes, this idea of sitting down and being quiet is uncomfortable for them. Right. And I'm like, wow, we have as a culture, as a people progressed at a high speed, but I don't think our emotional comfort and intelligence has gone up to matching speed.
Yeah, you're right. It's so difficult for me. Like meditation, I think it took me like 2 years until, quote unquote, I didn't judge myself like during it, you know? It's very difficult.
Oh man, I love meditation. And for anyone who's listening, the first thing I tell people about meditation is not clearing your mind. Because thinking about nothing is like impossible or just really, really hard. Not something for new people. What meditation is meant to be is to give you space to think about all that stuff you've been backburnering, right? Because I gotta get to work, I gotta get dressed, I gotta take a shower, I gotta, take care of this at work. Now I gotta eat lunch, now I gotta finish, like we have this nonstop of things going in our life. And what it's just meant to be is create space for you, right? I think we generally know that like when you bottle up your feelings, you explode. When you bottle up your thoughts, you explode or burn out, which is explosion still, right? And really slowing down from this competition, slowing down from this, I gotta keep moving forward. And yet you don't even know when was the last time you did some maintenance on yourself.
Yeah, I love what you said. I mean, especially bottling up your feelings. I've been very guilty of it, where trying to keep my cool all the time, trying to stay calm, cool, collected, and then it just, and then 1 month, like once every month, I like blow up, and I'm like, "You suck. The world sucks." Blah blah blah. And I was like, "Where did that come from?" And then someone gets to be the poor, beneficiary of just my random outburst, right? But it's like, it's not fair, you know? Yeah, I think meditation would probably help.
We were taught that, right? As men, as Asian men, as American men, take your pick. Like, you gotta be strong, cool, stoic. This is how you be valuable to society. This is how you get the girls, whatever, right? And it's when you blow up. The most common person that men blow up to is their significant other. All right. And that's so not nice to them because, first of all, they didn't sign up for that. And they're not a therapist. They're not like, oh, I'm here at your convenience. I'm here with an unbiased view, right? And second of all, we have resources. That's why we have therapists, we have coaches, we have, circles of friends. Who support us? We have family, right? Trying to bottle or just limit it up. You're just not being honest with yourself. And I love how you said, when you explode, it's not wrong to have like bad feelings, quote unquote, right? Sometimes you can be like, my commute was bullshit. My boss has been a jerk to me. I didn't perform as well as I hoped to do, and man, I'm being a little hard on myself. Like, those are human, emotions, human feelings. So I'm not going to be like, hey, don't have those. What I'm saying is like, feel them and give them their appropriate value and place, right? Don't blow up on random people. Don't blow up on your significant other. Work with resources. Ask for consent, right? I'm a huge proponent of just like building the relationship with even your close friends, right? Your buddies. It's like, hey, I've been having a hard time. Can I just like, I just want to vent, right? I don't want to fix. The most guy thing to do is try to fix, right?
Very true.
And the thing we're not looking for is fix. We're looking for validation. Am I crazy? Does this happen to other people, or am I just really alone? That's where the value is. And for some reason, we as a culture haven't taught men that.
Yeah, so true. I love what you said about guys' tendencies to fix things. Probably
I'm
comes.
engineer, bro.
I've been guilty of it, right? Like so many different. I can't even count how many times my wife talks about something, and then my natural tendency is like, "Well, have you tried doing this? Have you applied to another job? Like, blah blah blah." And our intention is like, "Hey, we want them to not be with the pain or whatever it is, like these quote unquote negative emotions." But really, all she wants is just to hear, like, us validate her, and so she feels like that she's not going crazy, you know?
And that's the hardest thing. I think it took me the longest time to realize is I was always suspicious of people because I grew up in a culture environment where like everything had an agenda, everything was transactional, and I felt very alone. That loneliness of not the fact that I'm an introvert, grew up awkward, engineer, none of that, but the feeling of like I don't feel validated. Do other people go through this? And one distinct memory I have is when a friend of mine, when I was in elementary school, he was like, "Oh, we're going on vacation." Like he was so happy, like beaming, puking rainbows happy. And I distinctly remember, like, is it possible to be that happy? And I'm thinking about that. I was like, I don't think I ever felt that happy about anything in my entire life. Right? Not the red envelopes, not the birthday parties, not Christmas, not Santa, like not nothing. And that I think that was my first spark of like, am I just different from everyone else? And it took me a long time to realize, no, it's not that I'm different from everyone else's. I haven't quite found my tribe, right? People understanding. And modern day we have like you have your Myers-Briggs, your Enneagram, your whatever, right? And so one it was for me to accept myself as, I don't get nearly as excited, but that's okay. This is my level of excitement or sadness or anger or whatever. And then the acceptance of others are like when people are loud and yelling and like screaming happy, I'm like, cool, we could use that in the world some more and not just annoyed of like, man, like be quiet, you're ruining the mood, right?
It's good self-awareness.
Yeah, like I was a really cynical dude and life was hard, right? And my realization was being cynical didn't help in the least bit. And being an optimist while people are like, well, you're naive, well, you're probably going to fail, on a statistical, level, yeah, sure, probably, right? Things don't work out as often as I hope they would. But that's not why I keep going. That's not why I keep hoping. That's not why I keep believing in people like me, you. My loved ones, right? That's not why we do that. We do it because we choose to believe. And that's actually part of my foundation of faith, like not in the Jesus, Allah, Buddha sort of faith, but like the connections between people in a spiritual level. Like I don't think we talk about that at all with your peers, right? Maybe with like a couple people that you confide to, but we don't talk about that. I would love to talk about that more in my peer circles.
Yeah, I love how you've done so much work on yourself and just that discovery and just that constant, like, where can I be responsible for my life? Like, where can I intentionally choose where my life goes instead of like doing what others want me to do or what society wants me to do? Yeah, this conversation has been really enlightening. And where can people find you if they want to reach out, perhaps learn more about your practice?
My website is thrivingturtle.com. I have a Facebook page and Instagram page. They're still being built right now, so appreciate your graciousness and understanding. You can find me, just reach out to me, and I invite people to, take that leap of faith, because that's what the best things are made of. Like when when we exceed our own imaginations, we exceed society's imaginations, we can have better stuff. I've never been successfully sold of why we can't have it all.
Love it. Thanks, Howie. Definitely food for thought, a lot to think about, a lot to reflect on our lives and intentionally choose how we show up and how we perceive life happening to us versus for us. All good stuff, man. I'm glad to have you on the podcast, and I'm sure there'll be many more in the future.
Yeah, I appreciate you. I'm thankful for you to give me an opportunity to, bounce ideas and talk and make these kind of conversations mainstream.
Thank you. Appreciate it.